Welcome to the Mommy Oyoyo podcast. Mommy Oyoyo is a platform for the modern African woman to talk about anything and everything related to motherhood in today's world. Join me, Berry Dakara, as we tackle the good, the bad, the ugly, the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses, and everything else in between. Mommy Oyoyo is your plug for real life gist and experiences about being a mother, African style. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Mommy Oyoyo podcast. This is episode 60, and as usual, it's your girl, Berry Dakara. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast today. I'm so excited to have you here. Today's episode features an interview I had with Ndali Ozebe of Hands Off Initiative. She's the Associate Director of Hands Off Nigeria, and they teach consent to children, teenagers, and also young adults. I think it's going to be a very insightful conversation for you to listen to and to learn from so that we can start teaching and talking to our children about consent, giving consent, and asking for consent and saying, you know what, no, I don't want to be touched, I don't want to be hugged, I don't want to be kissed, all of that. So make sure you guys listen to the episode or the interview after I'm done with some housekeeping. I just have two small requests. Please, please, please. The first one is, could you please, please, I'm begging you, I'm on my knees. Hey, God, I'm begging you. Please. sorry. But please, could you fill out the Mommy Oyoyo audience survey? I would like to know a little bit more about you, where you're from, where you listen from, what your listening habits are, which episodes you've enjoyed, what topics you want me to talk about in future episodes. And the easiest way for me to do that is by this survey. So please, please, please fill out the survey. I promise you, it only takes a couple of minutes to fill out the survey. And the link is in the show notes. Secondly, I'm asking for this Valentine gift, because the deadline is February 15th. What I'm asking you to do, please, is to nominate me, Berry Dakara, as an inspiring leading lady. Leading Ladies Africa is, they're currently taking nominations for the annual Leading Ladies nominations. And I would like for you to nominate me as a phenomenal and inspiring Nigerian woman. Why should you nominate me? Because of this podcast. Because I have created this platform to share, you know, real unfiltered conversations about motherhood for the modern African woman. And I don't believe, well, at least there aren't that many other podcasts out there that are quite like mine. There are some new ones coming up, which is awesome. But I think that I've been a trailblazer of sorts, you know, and I've been consistent. So please nominate me. The link is also going to be in the show notes. And that is all that I have today to ask of you. Now, I hope you guys enjoy the conversation that I had with Ndali. I hope I'm pronouncing her name properly. But I hope you guys enjoy the conversation. And I will catch you on the next episode. Thank you. All right. Hi, Ndali. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm doing so good today. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much for agreeing to be on the podcast and for Hands Off. And it's been a long time coming, but we are here. We're here. It's better late than never.
Finally. Yes, we are.
Finally. Okay. So like I like to ask my guests, could you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about who you are?
Okay, my name is Ndali Gregory Ozegbe. I'm a current graduate student at NYU studying marketing analytics. Why I'm on the podcast today is because I'm also the associate director for the Hands Off Initiative. I've held this position since our conception, which has been about 3 years now. And I also head marketing and growth strategy for an e-commerce app and a health tech startup.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
I like to be busy.
I can see that. I can see that. Well, kudos to you. Best of luck with everything that you're doing. You've mentioned that you are the associate director of Hands Off. Could you please give us a little bit more insight and more information about what Hands Off is, what you guys do, what your mission is, what you're aiming to do with the organization and everything?
So it's pretty simple. So the Hands Off Initiative, we're a nonprofit organization, and our whole point of starting operations and becoming established is that we want to break the cycle of abuse. And how we plan to address this is by going to schools and communities to teach children, teenagers, and young adults about consent. And hopefully, through all of these activities, we kind of, address the problem of rape, of sexual abuse, of harassment and assault, all culminating in the endemic gender-based violence problem that we have, especially in Nigeria and in Africa, but also across the world.
Okay, that sounds good. Where are you guys located?
So we're primarily based in Nigeria, and we have a presence in four states currently, including the FCT, but we also have operations in Canada, in France, and in the United States. So, oh, and in South Africa, we do have a base in South Africa, and that's been such important work for us. If you know anything about the problem of violence against women in South Africa, it's so important to have some sort of activities and outreach there as well.
Okay, thank you for that. Are you guys looking to expand to other African countries?
We are, the truth is the work never ends. There's always going to be a need to educate people and to, really get the word out there and bring these issues to the front of people's minds. So, we always have volunteers, but we also are still growing, and we want to make sure that we get our core processes in order, and we'll be able to cater to French-speaking countries as well, because like I said, we do have an established presence in France. So all of these things are in the work, and hopefully as we grow as well, we will be able to touch and reach all these other places where they need this kind of education, and we can just help in environment and the communities over there.
Okay, so for right now, most of your outreach is like in person. Do you guys do anything online?
So the pandemic, the elephant that's in the room, and we've been praying to leave. So we hit I want to say a massive turning point in our operations where, for the safety of children, the safety of adults, the safety of, everybody in our community, the people that we care about, our loved ones, we had to make the tough decision to stop outreaches. And so we were faced with a problem. It's at this point, it was early 2020. What are we going to do? That's the whole point, is to be able to impact people and, to change the future and to really help children with understanding these things at a young age so that they grow up into be re being responsible adults. And, so we did, we it was a conundrum, and we said, you know what? Let's go digital. Let's try this out. Zoom took off, where everybody's doing things on Zoom. If people can do classes on Zoom, can do health checkups on Zoom, why can't they have consent classes? So we completely went, thought up a digital strategy almost overnight and said, we're gonna give it a go. And it has been phenomenal. The response has been so great. We held so many digital outreaches, consent classes. I was on the panel of a couple of talks and things like that. So we really just gave it a go, and it's been so rewarding to see that in the future we might even be able to use this to reach other countries that we physically cannot get to yet, as you mentioned earlier. So that for us was a, get with the times, and just you can't just sit on your laurels and be like, oh, well, we'll wait for the pandemic to be over. Like, there's still work to be done. There's always work to be done.
Right.
And you know, from statistics, we found that actually cases of domestic abuse went up in the pandemic because people weren't, you know, going out as much. So they're in these environments, these toxic environments, these abusive environments, and it became almost even more important to be able to reach out to them in their spaces through digital channels, be like, you know, you can find help here. You can educate your kids here because these problems are still going on and they're even more real now that you can escape from the situation that you're from and your abuser in some cases is living with you.
Right, right. Okay, so thank you for that. Now, I was going to ask if someone wants to do an online class with you guys, do they have to come through an organization or through a scheduled event, or are you guys doing like one-on-one with parents?
Yeah, so we launched 2 weeks ago a Book a Consent class, which is where we have our trained volunteers and we do put them through training, and our volunteer schedule is very, very tight. You know, we have regular training schedules and we'd already been doing that through digital means and we continue to do so. So we have constantly fresh volunteers and they take these classes out of their own time and they can just be scheduled on our website, which is handsoffinitiative.org.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're
welcome. So let's pivot a little bit. from my understanding, and I should say, unfortunately, experience as well, a lot of Africans, let me not just say Nigerians because it's a widespread thing. Africans are sexually molested or abused while growing up from very, very young ages, from, you know, from caretakers to older or extended family members or parents, friends, things like that. Are there ways that we as parents, the Mommy Oyoyo audience, we have children, or if you don't have children, we have children that we love in our circles. Are there any ways that we can prevent the same things from happening to our children?
You know, and you're so right in saying that a lot of us have very similar stories. And as a survivor myself, you know, in hindsight, they always say is 20/20, and you're always looking to be better than, or, you know, to do better than what you experienced and what you wish was there when you were going through those similar situations. So, you know, I would say that creating an environment where there is continuous communication and education is absolutely vital. I think too often Africans, sometimes with these situations where they're sticky or uncomfortable, kind of, you know, put their head in the sand. And, you know, if we don't give it attention, it will go away. It doesn't go away. You know, young children, and even the way we bring up our kids in this, like, you know, the respectability politics of being African and of being Nigerian and the way our culture is, when we're bringing them up, they're made to feel as if raising the alarm will fall on deaf ears, you know, or that they have to adhere to whatever instructions an elder person tells them without question. You know, so it's boundaries as well. We have to say, look, I am your mother, your parent. It's not just, oh, anything auntie, this person tells you do, or respect your elders. You know what I mean? It's like, I am the only person that really should be key in any of the decisions that you make. You know, there's no more of tossing that responsibility to other elders. We take that, we own that, and we have to be there for our children. You know, the onus lies with responsible adults, not with the child. And as a society, we're also so quick to victim blame, you know, what were you doing there? Why did you wear that? And we say these things to children as well, to young boys and girls, you know, oh, that uncle, where did he see your bum to touch? Why were you, you know, shaking your bum in front of him? And our rate of developments can sometimes be very, very rapid in comparison to children from other races, for example, you know, so it's not anything wrong with the African children. Right. It's the society that we're protecting them from. It's our duty to ensure their safety, to protect their innocence, and to ensure that in such cases, if they should arise, they have the support they need through that trauma and on their journey to healing. You know, we have to teach our children about bodily autonomy from a young age, to respect each other, to respect personal space. And that is the foundation for consent.
I'm glad that you just mentioned that about teaching the children, because it just occurred to me as well that some sexual abuse and molestation comes from other children that are maybe a little bit older or whatever. But the thing is, they've been abused themselves, so they may not necessarily know that what they're doing is wrong as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you said, it's so, we never really think about it, but even some of these situations when you have boarding schools in Nigeria, which is, I'll use my my own experience, you know, you go in at 11, some kids that have done double promotion or whatever are potentially, you know, 9. And then the seniors are 16, some of them that have repeated once or twice are 17, 18. So you have situations where there's a boarding school, boarding house system. In the dorms, yes, you know, it's like male and female dorms, but there's still, you know, same gendered abuse that takes place. And then you have children that are 9 in the same living environment for children that from completely different backgrounds to them, not familiarly related at all, that are 18 years old. It is mind-blowing. It's almost like a ticking time bomb in some situations, and they are not getting sexual, they're not getting sexual health talks, they're not getting, you know, all these, how to, you know, how to, an outlet for them to express themselves or the questions that they have, because it's more often than not, it's demonized, you know, right. Like, why are you even thinking about it?
You know, you're not allowed to ask any questions.
They're repressed as well. You're not allowed to ask any questions. There's no kind of outlet for, and they're growing children. They're going to experience so much. You couldn't pay me to do adolescence again. You know, apart from the youth side of it, I wouldn't want to go through that. So it's just all these things that are bubbling and churning that, you know, we have to be so mindful for as well, and make sure there's communication, there's proper outlets for these things.
Thank you. Now, if a parent has a suspicion that their child has been abused, how should they approach that child? Like, what kind of questions should they be asking? What signs should they look out for? Just what should a mom do if she has that suspicion?
Right. So if a parent suspects that their child has been abused, there are three main signs that they always tell people or parents to look out for: physical signs, behavioral signs, and emotional signs. So physical signs is, you know, signs of trauma or changes to the genital area, you know, unexplained bleeding, bruising, you know, like warts or anything, blood on the sheets, underwear, clothing, that kind of stuff. That's, you know, fairly straightforward. Behavioral signs, you know, excessive talking or knowledge about sexual topics. There's also the alternative, the other side of the coin, which is keeping secrets and not talking as much. Again, you have to know your child. So this is like different to their baseline, right? Mm-hmm. Not wanting to be left alone with certain people, or being afraid to be away from primary caregivers, or, you know, regressive behavior. So things that they had outgrown at this stage, and suddenly you find that child has gone back to that. It's a trauma response, right? You know, overly compliant behavior, because that's often the sign of someone that has been, you know, cowed and moused, and, you know, they've being oppressed in some way. Sexual behavior that's inappropriate for their age, or spending, you know, like I said, unusual time alone, or avoiding removing their clothes. And then emotional signs are a bit harder to really tell, you know, change in eating habits, their mood, their personality, the decrease in self-confidence, their excessive worry, fearfulness. But there are also things like nightmares, like night terrors, or even self-harming behaviors that you have to be mindful of. And, you know, something else that people always tend to forget, not just, you know, what should I be looking for in my child, but what are the signs that an adult is hurting my child,
right?
Or a child, or something like that, right? So I'm just going to list some of them very quickly. Not respecting boundaries. An adult that, you know, doesn't take no for an answer, it's very possible that in cases with children, they're likely going to continue that kind of behavior. Engages in touching a child that's unwanted, or, you know, people that are too handsy, you know, it's often a telltale sign. Doesn't seem to have age appropriate relationships. You know, and this is why often we see in these situations, it's like teacher student, or lesson teacher student, or, you know, caretaker, you know, all these kids, and it's almost like the perfect disguise for predators. So it's like, well, I'm around kids all the time. That's my job. That's what I have to do, you know. But spending time alone, one-on-one with kids, certain children, is a massive sign of that, or unusual interest in what they're doing, their schedule as well. Because you often find you're like, where would this have happened? I know my child's schedule. I know where they are. But you know, where you are so busy doing your own things, and it's not a guilt thing. Predators will find that 5 minutes, because that's all it takes, really. You know, some, I think, and people said they think it's just some, you know, they take you somewhere and it's far. A lot of these things happen in the home in the blink of an eye. You know, your small child is passing through and someone just, you know, touches their bum, or an older person, you know, like squeezes past them in a very inappropriate way. Mm-hmm. The child isn't necessarily going to see that mentally as abuse, but that's not okay, you know, and we have to be the ones looking out for that to protect them. Yes, and also, you know, restricting children's access to other adults, like, oh no I'll do it, oh, you don't have to do it, I'll do it. So little things like that is where how we can also be on alert that this person, you know, there's something a little bit off about them.
Okay, so then we've talked about the signs that we should be looking out for. How do we then engage the child in conversation to say, hey, you want to talk to me about something? Like, how do we start that conversation?
So it goes back to a couple of the things I've said earlier, but I think the key point is that you don't wait for these things to happen and then start like demanding. Like, even from some of my experience, I've seen it, something happens. Ah, why didn't you tell me, Shabi? I asked you, da 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 da. And it's coming from a place of love, you know, and I know that. But the truth is, these conversations should have been happening before. It's a prevention thing. It's not a, oh, when there's now an incident, all of a sudden everybody wants to be like, oh, I'm so easy to talk to, you could have spoken to me, right? You know, the person, the auntie that's always eyeing you and telling you to do this like harshly, it's something like, oh, but I'm always here to talk,
right?
That's you know, and that they do mean it and they do love us, and you know, they want it to be true so bad. But the reality of situations is that a child is a child is a child. You know, it has to be patterns of behavior that they're seeing. They have to feel comfortable. They have to know. You have to have this established connection of communication with your child every day. How was school? What did you do? What's different? What's not? You know, if not, you're not even going to have a baseline. You're not going to know if a child is acting differently because you're not paying enough attention to what that child's behavior normally is anyway. So like I said, that it's more of a having that, even if it's just, you know, 10 minutes of your time, but having that, establishing that communication that in those kind of situations, you're easy to talk to, but in other situations, you're also easy to talk to. If I can talk to mom about everything, then it's more likely that in something like this, I'll talk to my mom, you know? So it's just the little behavioral tweaks that we have to make in order to have those scenarios even be plausible in the minds of children.
Okay, thank you very much for that. So let's say we've asked the child has confirmed, well, you know, that auntie touched me here, or that uncle said this to me. What next should the parents be doing?
You know, these things, they take a mental toll. I'm not a parent, but like you said, you know, they're children that I do care about in my circle. And even just the thought of something happening to them is just, you know, it just immediately fills me with dread, worry, and panic. There is no, I wouldn't say like there is any wrong answer apart from not doing anything. Right? It's a multi-pronged approach. You have to be proactive because you're their champion in this situation. You're fighting for them. You know, they should be immediately removed from that situation or from being in the vicinity of the abuser. Too often, I have heard stories of, oh, I told my mom it was this uncle, there was a family thing, a family meeting, everything was quote unquote sorted, whatever that means. And then the person is still coming to the home. That's completely unacceptable. Like, just imagine the years and years of damage that's doing. It's not that, oh, we didn't believe you. Oh, you know, well, he's related to you, you know, well, we're close family, friends, so let's just sweep it under the rug. It's fine, you know, you'll deal with it. It's fine, you're strong, you know, you'll get over it, and you're continuously seeing your abuser. Even if no more abuse happens, it's traumatic. So remove them from the vicinity, remove them from that toxic environment, and ensure that that environment does not repeat itself. Then, depending on the extent of the abuse, you know, it's important to seek medical guidance. Doctors are there to help and to evaluate the situation to the best of their abilities. And if you do intend to pursue, you know, a legal case, it will be the guidance and the recommendation from the doctors and, you know, their kind of their word and their assessments that will help to fortify your case. So that's also very important. And as soon as you can, to also, you know, really know what exactly went on, because sometimes children, depending on their age, are not necessarily going to be as descriptive. So you do need medical guidance on that. Then the authorities should be notified. Now, I mean, I would say if you're in Nigeria, but sometimes no matter where you are, the authorities can be difficult. And if they are, there are so many charities that are willing to help with their resources, guiding you through the process, being there for you. Off the top of my head, in Nigeria, we do have Hands Off. We have a licensed therapist as well. We have connections to so many governmental agencies. There's also WARIF and the Mirabal Center as well, just to name a few off the top of my head. And finally, I would advise counseling. And by counseling, I don't mean a pastor or religious head. While all those things are at your behest, I mean a professional, a licensed practitioner that is trained to provide treatment and rehabilitation. Abuse has real life consequences and long lasting effects that can shape all facets of a person's life going forward. It is too important to be left to someone that is not a trained and licensed therapist to deal with the fallout from that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very, very much for that. I hope you guys are listening. If you're in that situation, please make sure you take all of these different steps that Dali has mentioned. Now, you guys teach about consent. We're Nigerians. We don't like to talk about sex with our children. You know, it's I was just chatting with a friend of mine over the week, and he said when he was a teenager, he mistakenly dropped condoms on the floor in front of his mom, and his mom went ballistic, right? And then a few years ago, his same mom was riding in the car with him. I was like, oh, I heard that you have a girlfriend. People should not be making too much noise when you're having sex. And for him, it was so weird because, like, you have never once talked to me about sex before. When you did say anything, you were yelling and screaming at me because you found out, right? So our parents don't want to have these conversations with us until they're ready for us to get married. But things are changing. Things are definitely changing. How early should we start having conversations? And what kind of conversations should we be having? How do we teach our children about consent?
Yeah, I mean, that's the memories of, like, the non-sex talk is just so funny because it's really the absence of a sex talk. It's just like the dancing around all day. Like, I'm nearly 30. I have not had the sex talk yet with my mother, and I would happily die without having it. When the first grandchild appears, they appear. going back to your question, the truth is, you know, think about it also from our point of view. It's such an important question. We're a charity. We're trying to do basically sex education for Nigerian youth, but we have to get government permission and school permission and church permission.
Yeah.
And if we packaged it, let's say, as we're giving the sex taco, we would not have been able to reach the 4,000 children I'm counting so far that we had. It would not pass. Even with the way we've structured our curriculum, it is still very difficult to get approval for that, because for everything you have to go through the state governments and all of that, at least in Nigeria, which is understandable, and in South Africa as well. So that's why we say it's consent education. You can teach consent at any age. Consent is universal. There are so many resources nowadays, luckily, and books that can break it down depending on the key stage that your child is at. But the way that we see it is that I can teach anybody that they have a right to do what they want with their body. They have a right to say no. You can teach it as simple as pen. You're in a classroom, you're a friend. This can be somebody in, you know, primary school or somebody, even like a toddler, they understand the concepts. Oh, your friend took your pen without asking you, how do you feel? Oh, I'm annoyed, I'm unhappy. What do you think they should have done? They should have asked me for it. Do you think it's right for them to ask you? Yes, that is consent. They didn't have your consent to take it. It's stealing. When you do these kind of actions, you're almost stealing the person's, you know, consent. You're stealing their right to say no. You're stealing their right to choice, you know, when you perform these acts of abuse against them. And that's the way we break it down for children. It's like, you shouldn't take what's not yours. And you have a right to be like, this is mine and I don't want to give it to you. And when you break that down, it's a very easy concept. I mean, there's so many examples. There's one of like people with coffee and creamer, and it all boils down to consent. And that's why we focused on that. If you respect each other, then when you grow up, it doesn't become such a difficult concept for you to understand that there's nothing that I should be doing with this person without their permission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really just boils down to autonomy and respect and consent. And that's what it is, because we don't teach kids this. It's like even videos. There was a video of Gabrielle Union and her daughter Kavya, and she was doing that challenge where you kind of like lie in your child's lap and you hug them. And Kavya just went, no. Gab was like, ooh. You know, but it's as little as that she can barely talk. But for me, it was an example of her learning that if she doesn't want to hug her mom, there's no, oh, come here. You know, when the little kid, yeah, is like, oh, the auntie wants to hug you, go and hug them.
Yes.
If they don't want to, because then what happens if another auntie wants to come and, you know, it's a young boy and, you know, touch his private. He's been conditioned that, well, if my auntie wants to touch me, I can't say no.
Thank you so much for saying that. Oh my goodness. My daughter is what, 3 years old?
Don't let them call you rude, or you're rude. It's good like that.
My daughter is 3 years old, and I think it's very important that, you know, when you're talking to your children about consent and boundaries, you also need to live those values with your children. You know, you cannot tell your child, you know, it's okay to say no to that uncle or to that friend if you don't want them to give you a hug or a kiss or whatever. But me, you always have to. You don't, no, it doesn't work that way.
Absolutely.
It doesn't work that way. So I'm always very mindful, you know, do you want to give grandpa a hug before you go nanai tonight?
Exactly.
No, I don't want to. Okay, well then, let's just say nanai and go. Yeah. So it's not like we're not teaching your children to be disrespectful. It's not disrespectful to say, no, I don't want to be touched right now. No, I don't want to be hugged. No, I don't want to kiss. No, I don't want, you know, to be even tickled right now.
Yeah.
It's not disrespectful. You're teaching them to take ownership of their bodies, to take ownership of, you know, what they want in that moment or not.
Absolutely. And that's the key. And it's as simple as that, to be honest.
Thank you. Is there a difference in having this conversation when you have a boy child versus a girl child?
No, I don't think there is. Our belief in our charity is that it is not, because what you get by doing, so there's a reason that we're teaching consent. There's a reason we teach it to boys and girls, even though for the grand purpose of things is to stop the cycle of abuse, which disproportionately happens against female or girl children, right? You have to teach both male and female children and male and female adults, wrong is wrong. There's no specialty for this, a specialty for that, because it does go both ways. Consent is both ways. You know, male children are abused. Female children are abused. There's no, you know, magic formula. Just the way that you're, you know, your designated sex doesn't, you know, change the situation when you are going through an incident of being abused. You know, there's absolutely no difference. There's no difference in the teaching and the respecting of each other's bodies, and, you know, having your own bodily autonomy. That is the key thing here. And, you know, if you both end up respecting each other, then, like I said, our goal is to hashtag break the cycle. Then we're one step closer, at least for the next generation, to breaking that cycle.
All right. Thank you very much, Indah. This has been a very insightful and I think very needed conversation. I'm so glad that you guys gave us the time and the information, you know, to help prevent abuse going forward. If anyone who is listening wants to reach out to the Hands Off Initiative, how can they find you guys online? And again, just kind of go over what services you can offer to them.
So our social media handles are HandsOffNG. So that would be at HandsOffNG on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And you can find out more about our activities and follow our journey by going on our website, www.handsoffinitiative.org. You can help us in any way. You can volunteer your time, you can donate, or you can book a consent class for yourself, for your loved ones, you know, for your children, for your domestic staff, anything. You book a consent class. It's so needed, so necessary. And one of our volunteers will do it absolutely, you know, free. We'll set a time that's convenient to you, and we'll do what we do. And we just hope that, you know, more people really learn the importance of consent and of teaching it. And, you know, all the topics we talked about today are so timely. And yeah, I just hope it's been a very informative session.
It has been. For sure. It has been. Again, thank you so much for your time and for the information. And thank you so much for the work that you're doing. You guys are doing amazing things for the world at large. Thank you very, very much. And thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you. And thank you, Mommy Oyoyo community. I really hope to connect with you guys in some way, shape, or form. My handles are Indahlia Zigbe, if you ever want to reach out or privately DM me or anything like that. So, yeah.
Awesome. All of that information, the websites, the social handles, and Indahlia's as well, will be in the show notes. So you guys make sure you check them out. Thank you, Indahlia.
Thank you. Until next time.
All right. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Indahlia, and I hope that you garnered quite a bit of information on how to talk to your children about consent. If you enjoyed this episode, I have kind of a related episode, actually two. They're kind of related, but not quite, because they don't pertain to your children in particular, but they do have to do with sex. And that would be episodes 46 and episode 47, where I spoke with Olori Coitus about sex and the African mother. So again, those are episodes 46 and 47, sex and the African mother. I think that you'll enjoy those episodes as well. Once again, thank you very much for listening to the podcast, and I will catch you next time. Thank you for listening to the Mommy Oyoyo podcast, real conversations about motherhood for the modern African woman. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe to Mommy Oyoyo on your preferred podcast player, share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To keep up and join our conversations online, you can follow on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Mommy Oyoyo. Also check out our website at www.mommyoyoyo.com, and feel free to send feedback via email to mommyoyoyo@gmail.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you next time.